I had another primary that day. So I had two primaries, two that I helped win. And the other one was for the first woman to become a member of Congress from Puerto Rico. In 115 years since Puerto Rico has been sending someone to Congress, never had we elected a woman.
Welcome to the Art of Success podcast. I'm your host, Dana Buzinski, and I'm excited to be interviewing personalities from all different backgrounds on how they've learned and earned success. Our goal is that the stories would equip you to achieve success both personally and professionally. Please note that there may be explicit words or conversational topics in this podcast. So if you're underage or listening with a child, please be aware of this. Lastly, please note that all the views, beliefs, and opinions are not always a reflection of the hosts. Okay, let's jump in. Francisco Dominich, welcome to The Art of Success.
Thank you, Daniel, for having me and to all your listeners. I appreciate the opportunity to have a moment to share some thoughts with you and your listeners.
You are a very dynamic individual. You're doing so many things. We're going to get, your story and what you do in the world for the world is truly remarkable, as well as even the time we spent. You really shifted my mindset on the idea of lobbyists and politicians and just how much pressure you guys are under. And so I'm excited to get into a lot of that. But I'd like to start the show off every time by having you give the audience just a little bit of an idea of your upbringing, your family life, maybe some of those milestones that got you to where you are today.
Sure, certainly. And I generally talk about what we do and what we can do for people, not generally about me. And even though I'm sure we'll get into it, my campaign management experience, I'm not usually the campaign manager, so I let the candidate speak. So this is a new for me, but I'll give it a shot. I was born in Puerto Rico, in San Juan, but spent part of my childhood growing up in Florida, and not Miami or Tampa or even Orlando, but North Central Florida, or what we like to call South Georgia. And it was a great upbringing over there, and it really it allowed me to further my bilingual education and my bilingual background, which, you know, later on we can discuss how that's helped me immensely in not only in the mainland but attracting clients from the rest of the world. After I was done with high school, I decided to come back to Puerto Rico, although my family stayed back. I have three brothers, and they all stayed back initially just to further my Spanish and really make sure that I was on top of my grammar and reading comprehension in both languages, English and Spanish. But then I got involved with politics at the collegiate level, and then I became student council president of my university, University of Puerto Rico. And after that, I started working in campaigns in Puerto Rico.
Great.
And after working in campaigns in Puerto Rico, I started working in campaigns in the mainland as well. So I had a duality of working through cycles, working both state and national campaigns. And again, having grown up in Florida, I think it facilitated that I could work on campaigns in Florida and Texas and California and New Hampshire. So I finished my undergrad degree in 3 years, just because I think time is a precious thing. And so not because I'm a super nerd or anything like that. It's just that I didn't want to waste time. So I finished my undergrad in 3 years, and I went right into law school and became a young lawyer at 25, and started working at Puerto Rico's top legal firm. I initially did not start out as a lobbyist in my career. I started as a litigating attorney. After you know, working in campaigns and in politics, I was after that I headed a government agency in Puerto Rico, which is the equivalent of the Congressional Research Service in the Legislative Assembly. So after I got done with my government service and having now worked through probably three campaign cycles, I said, you know, what better way to combine what I do, the advocacy? You know, litigating attorney is an advocate.
Yep.
And my love of politics. So that's where the idea of you know, getting into lobbying came from. Back in 2008, had just gotten done the first Hillary Clinton campaign that I managed, the one in 2008, which she lost to President Obama. And I had already worked in gubernatorial campaigns in Puerto Rico at the same time. So it just seemed like a right fit. And 10 years later, it was the right call for me. It's been an incredible experience, never a boring day. As you said in your intro, it is a very stressful profession, and it is a very demanding profession, particularly in Puerto Rico, because we have a very active government, that regulates everything, a full-time legislature. I mean, our legislature in terms of output is comparable to the legislatures in New York and California. Wow. And there's actually not a lot of lobbyists or lobbying firms in Puerto Rico. So that's another reason I got into this business, because I saw it as an opportunity for not just professional growth, but to do something that, while there was a few people around doing it, not that many, and not in the sense of the company that I established, Polytank, the firm that I established, which we modeled after DC lobbying firms in a bipartisan manner. Puerto Rico is very politicized, even more so than Washington, D.C. Hmm. And so you don't get usually people from the different parties to work together in a same house, call it that, a same house,
right,
for politics. The reason I was able to do it is because I brought together people that had a trajectory of either working together or having had work together through the years. So they already knew each other. They had already worked with each other. They already respected each other.
That's great.
And that's how I was able to establish Polytank. So I think that's the quickest overview I can give you about my trajectory.
Yeah, so let's get to that. Let's get to the company name now, because I think that one thing that I'm really intrigued by is single word names that represent what they do.
Yeah.
And the word is the brand. The brand is the word. You've created a pretty remarkable brand that's attracted some huge clients. Talk to us about the choice of the word, the art of choosing the word, and the name of your company, right?
Yeah. And I appreciate that question, because I don't normally get asked this in any type of settings. People, I have to say, I don't want to sound conceited, but everybody has loved the name since inception, since the company started, both here and in D.C. and in New York, and a lot of the spots where we get referrals and represent clients from. And basically, so people tend to think that lawyers, what they're trained to do is that they know all the laws. You know, when I graduated from law school, that's the question I would always get. You know this law? Do you know that law? And my answer would be like, no, I actually don't. But I can look it up, and then I could tell you what I think it means. And you're going to be like, why is he saying that? Well, because we are trained in research and writing and comprehension. So when I was starting the business, I literally got several marketing books and read them. Yeah. And I came across what you said, single word names. Word names that sound like actual words.
Yep.
You know, like they could be a real word, but they're not. So I read about, you know, Apple, Cisco, all these different brands, and why they're exact. Well, great. Exactly. Skype.
Quiller's another one. Facebook, Instagram. It's like,
yeah,
all these random words squished together that kind of depict. Yeah. Keep going. It's,
I can't believe you just said that, because Polytank is three words squished together. Public policy think tank.
Yeah.
Or a political think tank. If you're going to ask, I came up with it. So I didn't come up with a logo, because that's actually my oldest brother, who's a graphic designer, incredible artist, did. But I came up with the word, and it's a squash of those concepts. And people get it. People, when you tell them what we do and our name, they're like, oh my God, that makes perfect sense. We love it.
It totally does. And if you remember when we were talking, I said the same thing. I'm like, I know exactly. It's like public policy. I mean, for me, it was political think tank.
Yeah.
It was easy right there.
And you got it right away. And lots of people get it right away. That's the play we're playing on. And it took me about 2 weeks. It took me about 2 weeks of every day sitting down, thinking of names and whatnot. I want to think that 2 weeks is rather quick for coming up with a name. But then again, you know, you hear all these stories about how people like Steve Jobs and all the other greats came up with their names, and it seemed like they did it quicker. So, but it took me 2 weeks. And after that, it was like, all right, how do we make the logo and all that grab people's attention as well? I glanced over it, but I grew up in I did not grow up in a family full of lawyers or politicians. I'm the only lawyer in my family. My three brothers do completely different things, each one of them. And my mother, for example, was very artistic. So I did grow up in a very artistic sort of home, with my oldest brother being an artist, my mother being very artistic. So after choosing the name, it was very important, the logo and the image we wanted to project. And my brother was very helpful in capturing that. Polytank has an asterisk, the K on top, right? And when my brother came up with that, I was like, what's that all about? And he's like, exactly. And I'm like, okay. So what he meant was, when he said exactly, is that I was asking. It grabbed, it was an attention grabber because I was asking about the asterisk and what it meant. He's like, yeah, I put it there so it would grab your attention. And when people ask me nowadays, they ask me, so what's that asterisk all about? And I'm like, yep, it just did it. What it's all about, it just did it.
I was literally, I'm on your website right now, and I was gonna say, what's with the asterisk? Yeah. I promise you, as God is my witness.
Yeah. Well, that's great. You're a very creative person as well. It catches you. Yeah, and that's the asterisk is stuck. And look, almost 10 years later, I'm proud to say that if you're in New York City, if you're in Washington, D.C., if you're in Florida, at the very least those three places, and you ask about a lobbying firm, a government affairs firm in Puerto Rico, they will tell you, even before my name, by now we've gotten to build the Polytank brand. They'll say Polytank. And I always, that's another thing. I did not want it to be, even though I'm the founder of the firm, I did not want it to be my last name. I wanted it to be something that grew way more than me, and
I'm
everybody
glad you did
felt
that.
And I think that's,
and I'm glad.
I know we're gonna get into this, but it needed to be a name that people felt they could have a buy-in. The people, my colleagues working at the firm didn't feel excluded versus
totally.
Dominage and partners. Everybody can work at Polytank. It's everybody's. And that's what I really set out to do.
Talk to us about two things. One is, if there's aspiring entrepreneurs or leaders or business owners that are listening in, why is the name so important? I think you've hit a lot of those things, but I want to get your one-liner on that, right? And then I want you to get into how the name and the process that you've created, as well as the brand, as well as the value. I think it's all about the value you've learned to deliver has attracted these Fortune 100 clients.
Yeah, those are all great questions and points. Look, I think it's at the end of the day, and again, from reading these books, it said put out a horizon of 5 to 10 years for brand building, for real. And I'm sure you're aware of that because you're a master, you're a jack of all trades. I'm not going to say the first couple of years everybody knew what Polytank was, not just in the mainland but here, but the goal was that people would associate the brand name, the name, with government affairs and political work in Puerto Rico, and that it was a name that could be trusted in deliverables, and it was not situated with one person. Why? Because lobbying firms in Puerto Rico used to be, for the most part, either one-man shops or two-man shops, but they would ebb and flow with the different political parties ascending to power. We transcend those. We have people from both parties and transcend that. And that's another thing we wanted to convey with a name. I am both locally and nationally joined at the hip with very identified parties. But again, Polytank couldn't be about me.
So you're getting the inside information kind of thing? Like you're getting both sides of the story?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the value to the clients, aside from that, from getting both sides of the stories, is that just in true form of how these firms should operate, in state capitals, Sacramento, California, Buffalo, New York, Tallahassee, Florida. We needed to transcend, election cycle after election cycle. We needed to tell our Fortune 100 clients, many of which have remained with the firm for the almost that 10 years that we've been in business, that they didn't need to look out. They didn't need to go firm shopping if a particular party or a particular administration
won. That's killer.
They could stay right where they are. You know what? And that saves them money because no learning curve.
Right.
No learning curve. We already know your issues. We already know what we need to protect, what we need to advance. And that's a big value to these companies, that they're comfortable, that their issues are known to the people who are working on their behalf, and that they don't have to spend, again, another time in a learning curve, bringing people to meetings, to educate them. So that was important. And what is interesting about, again, Polytank, if you look at everyone's bio, as I tell everybody, there's three things you need to have to work at Polytank. None of them have to do with having Ivy League education. They have to do with real life experience. You have to have had meaningful experience in the government sector. Everybody who works at Polytank has meaningful experience working in the government sector. You have to have meaningful experience working in the private sector. Everybody at Polytank has meaningful experience working in the private sector. And the last thing, you always have to work in every cycle in a campaign. So you stay sharp on your political skills. That's and killer. So that you never lose sight of how you speak to an elected official and an appointed official. And so why those three things? Well, again, if you're not in government, you know, you can go to law school and you can take, you know, now they actually teach lobbying in law school. If you take, you know, it's not a mandated course, but you can take that or parliamentary procedure and all that. And that's all fine. And everybody needs to get their education. But where you will learn the most about moving things or stopping things in government is when you work inside the government.
Right.
I mean, because you might have thought, well, that's for the relationship building. Certainly, part of the having worked in government is important because that's
got to take years, though, right? It's got to take years of the actual practicality.
It takes years.
How everything works.
Yes, it takes years. And it takes years to develop these relationships, and it takes years to really become an insider on how, you know, parliamentary procedure works, legislative procedure works, how to deal with government agencies. And then, so that's why the public sector experience is very important. You're going to be like, well, why the private sector experience? Well, if I have a firm that represents private sector interest and my colleagues don't understand our clients, then we're useless.
Right.
If they cannot take what our clients are saying and translate it and put it into political jargon or government jargon so that the public official understands, then we're not doing our job.
Right.
And the only way you're going to learn how to think like somebody from the private sector is if you have been in the private sector.
Right. Yeah, and I feel like just really quick too, like these are just a few of the high standards you've created for team members and employees, right? I mean, so first thing, thanks for telling me about those. Tell us a little bit of some of the standards you have, even just from a workforce, you know, from a place of positivity, from solution driven, from image and look. I mean, I know that you're running at a fast speed, and I'm sure that many of the other individuals kind of, you attract who you are, right? You're attracting a team of highly knowledgeable and excellent driven individuals. Talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah. So we hit on one of them. You know, to continue to work at Polytank and to work at Polytank, you have to work in campaigns. You have to maintain those sharp skills that really you get from political campaigns. And you're like, what do you mean skills? Like rapid response. You know, we deal in crisis day to day for our clients. So where do we get our rapid response skills? Where do we get our crisis management skills? Where do we get our untiring, unwavering work ethic from campaigns that keep you up 2 to 3 days. I mean, I literally, and we didn't get into it because, again, I don't want to just sound completely conceited, but in 2016, I ran two major campaigns at the same time for a span of 4 months. Not the whole, not the whole ride, but for a span of 4 months, I ran two major campaigns, which was Hillary's primary campaign in Puerto Rico and Puerto Rico's first woman in Congress campaign.
My gosh.
And there were two different teams. We had two different teams. It wasn't I had the same team. I had two different teams because that wouldn't have worked. If, you know, certainly I couldn't run two campaigns if I had the same people from each working for each of them. So, I mean, election primary day, the couple of days before the primary, I didn't sleep for about 48 hours, not of my choosing, but because we had so much work. So I think while certainly there's highs and lows in our work, when there's the legislative session is in, which in Puerto Rico, that's why I said comparable to New York and California, it's 10 months out of the year. So those 10 months, it's pretty intense. But when there's breaks in them, you get a month and a half break in the summer, and you get about a month and a half break in the winter as well. When you get in that break is when everybody at Polytank, you know, structurally takes some vacation, takes some time to recharge. But during the legislative sessions, we're running full speed. And, we're, you know, the individuals, as you pointed out, they sort of run like me. They run, you know, they can go on, you know, 7 days after 7 days after 7 days until we get done. And that, I think that's important as well, because it's a high speed, high fast paced work environment, and things change with the news cycle. And we, like I said, we manage crisis for clients as well.
And I want to hear too, because you already mentioned it. Talk to me about this whole, like, the believing in empowering women in the world and why it's so important, because I know that that's a big part of your company. That's a big part of your culture. It's a big part of who you are. You've taken on campaigns that maybe few would. And you have not really, you know, stuck your neck out, but you'll speak for it better than I will. Talk a little bit about that, because it's pretty unique.
Yeah. So I'm proud to say that half of our employees and half of our workforce at the firm are women. So we practice what we preach. You know, it's funny. I don't have any sisters. I have brothers. So I grew up basically, except for my mom, obviously, in an all-male household. But then I have two daughters. And not that I wasn't already a liberal or had these thoughts in my head about equality and fairness in the world, not just towards minorities, but towards women. They were, let's just say that they were more ingrained when I had my girls.
Yep.
Working in the environment that I work in, both, you know, I was litigating attorney for, you know, we have to skip over that, but I did litigate for several years and litigated in court several cases, both in the local courts as well as the federal district court. In that environment, in the campaigns environments, in the government environments, it's unfortunate, but there is still discrimination. And there is still towards women. And there is still bias. And there is still inferiority complexes. And they are underpaid. So I think I've always wanted to be an agent for change. That's why, you know, I didn't get into the public sector. And I wanted to clarify that. I didn't get into the public sector thinking, this is going to be my training ground to be a lobbyist. Mm-hmm. So after I was finishing my public sector experience, I said, I wanted to go back to the private sector. And that's when I said, you know, I should combine my two passions. So coming back to the word change, change needs to begin at home. The way we can change the world is with ourselves and with our and what we do at home. So I couldn't be preaching the things I preached if I didn't think about the world I was going to leave behind or live in the present with my daughters. So it much has to do with my daughter.
And then what about talk to us about some of the stuff that you've done though. Like, you know, you've done, that's kind of your source, you're saying, right? But then that's kind of translated into some pretty unique things you've done for the world by supporting and going after women's rights in policy and politics.
Yeah. Well, even though we didn't elect the first woman president, and I was heartbroken by that, because she was an incredible candidate. And I do believe, regardless of your audience's political inclinations, that she would have been the best president our country would have had in more than a generation. She was so prepared, so smart. And so I invested two campaigns working for Hillary. And, you know, we won the primary here. And the pretty interesting thing is, like I said, actually that I had another primary that day. So I had two primaries, two that I helped win. And the other one was for the first woman to become a member of Congress from Puerto Rico. In 115 years since Puerto Rico has been sending someone to Congress, never had we elected a woman. So Hillary was not successful, we were successful in electing, her name is Jennifer Gonzalez, Jennifer, to Congress in November 2016. And I was proud to lead those efforts because we were breaking a barrier.
Yeah.
And I think those are always important to break, because it sends a ripple through society and it gives hope to those classes that have felt discriminated. On a side note, she's also the youngest. She became the youngest member of Congress from Puerto Rico ever as well, which is something I've always been keen on. I did a lot of work for youth and young people, you know, not that I'm getting too old, but I was younger and worked on a lot of youth issues. So to me, it was important that that Jennifer got elected basically at 40 years old and the first woman. And I think that was pretty impactful. Another thing that I do believe that I do both personally and as a firm is we give a lot. We give a lot to different charities. I would say half of them have to do with scholarships to students to, you know, go to college or go and work in Washington, D.C., because I am a firm believer that sometimes people just need a modicum of help for them to succeed in life.
Right.
I was blessed with the kind of family I had that I was able to, you know, to do all my college work without having to take out loans. I've always felt that I've had so many opportunities and so many opportunities to work with great people. We've mentioned some of them, but I've worked with probably the last three or four gubernatorial candidates for my party here. And in state sites with a plethora of members of Congress that I should help open those doors for others.
Right.
And that's why we also have a firm commitment of, you know, helping different charities. And like I said, about half of them that deal in scholarships or work opportunities for minorities.
It's super cool. So talk to me too a little bit about, give me if you had to give me the biggest underlying philosophy of what drives you every single day. Maybe it's one for your personal life and one for the professional life, your business. What would those be?
I'd say that I'm driven, and I just my work ethic. People ask me the secret to, you know, my success is just that I outwork the other side. And to me that is,
that's cool.
If we should not go to bed because we need to outwork the opposition, we won't go to bed. I mean, it's tough, but if anybody were to ask me what got you through college, what got you through government, what has gotten you through campaigns, What is the success behind Polytank? And I think our clients say this. Our clients get emails from different Polytank team members 24 hours. They may be getting an email at 10 p.m., at 2 a.m., at 8 a.m. They say, like, you people don't sleep. And no, we haven't timed them, you know, through the email exchange server or anything like that to make it seem no. If somebody's sending an email at 2 in the morning, they're really up at that time writing the email, or at 10 p.m. or at 8 a.m. Hmm. So it is just a relentless work ethic.
That is super cool.
I think aside from whatever, you know, relationships we may have with different policymakers from both parties in Puerto Rico and in D.C., regardless of our just inside knowledge of the political process because of our different background experiences, one of my colleagues at the firm is a former Senate president and a former Secretary of State, Lieutenant Governor. So, you know, that's the kind of talent we have.
Aside from that, that helps, right?
Yeah, that helps a lot. Everybody has this drive to not stop until we feel, not that the work is done, that we've outmaneuvered the other side.
That's killer. No, I love that. Man, that's killer. Well, look, we're a little bit up on time here. I'll always like to end the show with a unique question, too. So if you can kind of go back to your younger self, I don't know, think 18, yeah. 19, 20, you can give yourself one bit of advice, and maybe not the work ethic one, right? Because I think that was just kind of ingrained in you, possibly, right? But, you know, what would be some of the things that you tell yourself? Like, what would you share with your younger self?
And I can tell you right away, it's in an article that was done on me on the Caribbean Business, a local business publication. I had the honor to be part of their 40 under 40 class. And I quoted, Ferris Bueller. I have to paraphrase it now. I forget the quote, but it's the quote at the end of the movie, basically, when he says, you know, sometimes in life you got to stop and enjoy life because you might just miss it. That's not the exact quote, but that's what he basically says at the end of the movie.
And I remember.
I said the exact quote to the paper then. So I would tell my younger self because, you know, like I said, I did my degree in 3 years. I was working in student government and campaigns. I was also working, didn't go over that, but I was already working in law firms as a law clerk and for federal judges. I would actually say to myself, stop and, you know, enjoy yourself a little bit more. Enjoy life a little bit more. I mean, now I can dictate somewhat my schedule and my time with my girls, for example, and with my family. But, you know, there's certainly been a lot of periods in my life where all I've done is work, work, work. So I would tell myself, and I tell my girls now, that you go through each stage of your life and you should enjoy those stages in your life.
That's super good. Yeah, I remember I looked it up on Google. It's life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you might miss it.
That's exactly what I would tell my younger self.
It's so good, man. Well, Francisco, thanks for spending time on the show with us. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. Really, really enjoyed the conversation. And just thanks for taking time with us.
No, I appreciate the opportunity. And again, I can't thank you enough, Daniel, to have me on your podcast. And for those, the audience you've already created, with everything you do. So I appreciate it.
I hope you're more successful in life because of this episode from The Art of Success. If you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe for the future updates on other episodes released. Also, if you've enjoyed what you heard today, share The Art of Success with a friend, colleague, or family member. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode.